This is the Big East Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, the Big East Sports Show rolls on here in Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, and we would love to connect with you. Join us on Twitter at eRadio Sports Hour 1. We had a ton of college football talk as we recapped the national championship and the Georgia Bulldogs coming out on top. Right now, we're going to continue, though, our NFL news and notes and the wild card weekend. John Bellmer, my producer, hanging out with me in studio. And you know what, John, as we reflect back on this week, and of course, big matchups today, but Black Monday. There were several coaches fired. What was your reaction when they let go? Matt Nagy, Mike Zimmer, and Brian Flores.
Yeah, Brian Flores shocked me. I think it shocked everybody down in Miami that Brian Flores is no longer there. Matt Nagy, obviously, that's been a teapot ready to whistle all year long. Like, people have been getting rid of him. Mike Zimmer, honestly, 8 years, I believe he was in Minnesota. That's long enough if you can't get over the hump. That, you know, they need to move on. Urban Meyer, John Gruden, Vic Fangio, there's a lot of coaches. David Culley also gets the can, too. I mean, there's a lot of changing going around.
You know, coaching is a tough business. Which opening is the best situation for a prospective head coach?
I want to say Denver. I think Denver is the closest team to a quarterback away. And they can go out and figure the quarterback out, but I think they need a leader, a head coach that can get them over the hump. Vic Fangio just wasn't doing that. I think Denver's probably my number one coaching opening.
You know, just a moment ago, you were talking about the firing of head coach Brian Flores. Where do you think you will ultimately see him land? Because obviously a super talented coach, and I thought he did a pretty darn good job with the Dolphins.
Oh, I know we'll see him land somewhere, and I think honestly you'll see him land wherever Deshaun Watson wants to go. Him and Deshaun Watson have the same agent. They're very close, and that's why Deshaun wanted to get to Miami, and I think that had a lot to do with Brian Flores getting fired in Miami as well. So I think he'll end up wherever that is, and I think that also could actually be Denver. Denver's had interest in Deshaun Watson before, and I think they're looking at Brian Flores as well to try to make that pairing in Denver.
Okay, the playoffs are here. Wild card weekend. Some big matchups today. 4:30 Eastern time, AFC. We have got the number 5 seed, the Las Vegas Raiders, at the Bengals, and you can watch that on NBC, and an 8:15 kickoff with the Patriots and the Bills on CBS. Stick around. Much more coming your way here in Hour 2 at Sports Map Radio Network. Come on back.
This is the Big East Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show. We will continue to get you ready for the Super Wild Card Weekend. Up next, we're going to focus our attention on my team. That's the Cowboys, as they get ready to face the 49ers in one of the big matchups to watch. We are so delighted to have with us. He has covered the Cowboys for 23 years. You got to check out his brand new podcast, A Cowboys Life, DallasCowboys.com. The one and only Brady Tinker. Welcome back and Happy New Year.
Good to be here. I'm fired up about the season finally being over, and it looks to me like there are literally 8 teams between the two conferences that it wouldn't shock me if they won a Super Bowl, so that's perfect.
Absolutely. The Cowboys, currently 12-5, 49ers 10-7. How do they match up against the 49ers?
Well, if you're a betting man, there's one easy bet here. The over and under is 51. It is the highest, as we sit here right now, over and under betting line of any of the playoff games, and I think that's the easiest under of the week and of the playoffs as I sit here now. It's going to be a much better matchup than people think. The 49ers can play the run, can get to the quarterback with 4 men, and really their only slight weakness is their corners. But if you can rush just 4, you can give them help with safeties and linebackers, and the 49ers will give the Cowboys a tough time, no doubt.
When we think about Dak and the Cowboys, they have shown us to be a little bit unpredictable at times and hard to truly fall in love with. Like, are they going to break your heart? I mean, can we trust them? Like, what team is going to show up?
Well, I think if you cover all the teams, you'd feel that way about almost every single team. Every team seems to have inexplicable losses, has certainly had some loss of players to injury. Every team has lost, guys to COVID. So it's been that kind of season. Maybe the Packers are the only team that doesn't have a shocking loss in all of the NFL. So I think, I'm from Kansas City, so I follow my Chiefs, and everybody seems to think they're the odds-on favorite to come out of the AFC, and I have seen all kinds of vulnerability, right? They were ranked 30th in defense for the first 7 weeks of the season. So I think whatever nerves you have about your team and the Cowboys, everyone else has them too. Jimmy Garoppolo is not a great quarterback. He is a bus driver, to use an old term. This is a running, physical football team that when he can go play action and take four or five shots down the field during the game, then they're at their best. But if you can slow that running game down at all and make him throw passes on 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, you can get some sacks, then I think you'll also get some turnovers. 20 touchdowns and 12 interceptions is nothing impressive.
DallasCowboys.com, Brady Tinker is with us at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show. As we preview the Cowboys and the 49ers, I hate to admit this, but I actually can remember the rivalry back in the 90s between these two teams. I mean, like, time does fly. So what's your level of concern facing the 49ers? I don't think these are the guys they wanted to see on Wild Card Weekend, Brady.
Well, maybe not, but I don't necessarily think they wanted to see Kyler Murray at AT&T Stadium again, because he's 8-0 and he played basically a perfect game, and he has 200 people in the stands rooting for him because the kid is local. So I don't think they wanted that either. So I think in the end, these games, for the most part, come down to turnovers and quarterbacks. And I think the Dallas Cowboys feel good that their quarterback can make more plays and has more big play weapons, if you will, than the 49ers do. So I think ultimately these games come down to that. If the 49ers get a lead, if somehow the 49ers jump out 14-0, then the Cowboys are in trouble. But other than that, I think the Cowboys have too much in the end for the 49ers. I think you'll see there's nothing that's been announced, but I think Tony Pollard, to be honest with you, moves to option number one. So I think Zeke will start because he's the starter. But in the end, Zeke gets the late-game closer-type carries. He gets the carries probably around the goal line. But Tony Pollard offers, obviously, so much more quickness, so much more big playability, and I think some of that's going to happen. They're also going to make some tweaks on offense, because I think we all know the first 7 weeks of the season, this was the best offense that we had seen and maybe that anyone had seen in 10 or 15 years. I mean, they were unstoppable. They were running for nearly 200 yards a game. Every play-action pass worked. Everybody was healthy. The offensive line was dominating. And then there was a 7 or 8 week stretch in there where the offense wasn't nearly as good, but the defense got better. So I think I trust in the balance of this team. This is the second rated offense in the NFL. It's the 6th rated defense, and it's the 8th rated special teams unit. So that's the kind of balance the teams that win 3 or 4 games and win a Super Bowl have.
Well, and the good news, Micah Parsons returns.
Yeah, everybody's back. They're other than Michael Gallup, they're basically not missing anybody.
Yeah.
They had some more activations today. Tyron Smith is going to play. I think it's really good that Pollard got a week off. So we'll see how the plantar fascia, I think, is what's the problem with him on the bottom of those feet. So, all of those things can be worked on. You step on a lot of pool balls and roll them back and forth, and everybody heals differently. But this team is pretty darn healthy, and even though Week 18 was against half of Philadelphia's team and the other half sat on the sidelines, it was still very good for this team. There were things they wanted to iron out. There were things they wanted to be more comfortable with. There was communication. There was depth of routes. There were things that they wanted to fine-tune, and they kept a lot of starters in that game through the fourth quarter, and they got lucky because nobody got hurt. It gave them some momentum, and I think it was a really good thing, despite everybody saying, well, there was no competition. It doesn't matter. It was a really good practice for them, and they moved up to number 3.
Brady Tinker, DallasCowboys.com. Reach out, connect with our audience. What are they going to find, and what are they going to learn on a Cowboy life?
I call it that because it's just one guy at a
Correct.
Time. So for 23 years, the thing I've enjoyed most is being in the locker room and getting to know every year 4, 5, 6 guys that I didn't know. And eventually, once they trust you a little bit, they'll tell you about their families, and they'll tell you about the things that were good or bad in their life, and the preachers that helped them, or the fathers or the grandfathers. And that's what most of these stories are, is that they feel grateful to be where they are, to be in the league, to be wearing the star, and they will tell you some uplifting, fun stories. And A lot of them are about current players, and a lot of them go all the way back to Randy White and Drew Pearson and Cliff Harris. So there's a real mix, but it's called A Cowboy Life. So if you go to DallasCowboys.com and click on the podcast, and I think they have now 10 podcasts. You have to scan down a little bit, but you'll see it. And there are 19 stories there for you to dine on, and I'd love to hear what everybody thinks.
Hey, we are looking forward to the big match of 49ers-Cowboys on Sunday, 4:30 Eastern time. Kickoff, and always a true pleasure to catch up, provides wonderful insight, and that is Brady Tinker, DallasCowboys.com, A Cowboy Life. Thank you, Brady.
Thank you.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way at Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, here we go. Hour two, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell. Many different ways to connect with us, always live on Twitter at eradiosports. You can email the show at info@eradiosports.com. And it is Wild Card Weekend. And the Arizona Cardinals will face the Rams on Monday night in the 2022 NFL playoffs. And we are looking so forward to visiting with our next guest to get his perspective. And that is Hall of Fame voter and publisher of the All Cardinals site at Sports Illustrated. And you can also listen to him on Sirius XM NFL Radio for his weekly Hall of Fame radio show. He does an amazing job, a legend in our business. And that is Howard Balzer. Good morning, Howard.
Good morning to you. And of course, remember, at least the NFL says this, it's super wild card.
That's right.
They had to throw that word super in there. Like, we need to hear that to say, yeah, I think I'll watch these games. I wasn't going to watch any playoff games, but now that they're calling it super wild card weekend, then I guess I'll have to take a peek, right?
Hey, it is a jam-packed January, and it is loaded for this weekend. So let's get our listeners up to speed, and I want to specifically focus in on the Cardinals because they finished the regular season 11-6 for the second spot in the division, and now will face the Rams in Los Angeles to kick off the playoffs. So how would you summarize how the season has played out for the Cardinals, because they got off to such a hot start? They're, what, 10-2 after 12 games?
Yeah, they were 7-0, of course, before losing
right
to Green Bay in that wild Thursday night game. And it's really been a roller coaster for this team. And getting off to the great start, like you said, obviously they needed that great start to get into the playoffs because the finish wasn't very good except for one win against the Cowboys, which notably came on the road, where this team is 8-1 on the road, but not so good at home. In fact, lost their last five home games of the season. So it's been kind of a strange up and down year. All teams have had adversity, certainly with injuries, with COVID and all that. The Cardinals have been particularly hit. And, you know, J.J. Watt played the first seven games when they were undefeated, hasn't played since then. They're hoping to have him back Monday night in a miraculous recovery when he had his left shoulder basically destroyed in a game against Houston. DeAndre Hopkins was lost. They've rarely played with both Chase Edmonds and James Conner in the backfield. The secondary has had some issues over recent weeks. So they've had to overcome a lot, and it's going to be interesting to see whether they can weather that on the road against the Rams, where they did win rather handily, actually, in week four. So it shapes up to be a very intriguing matchup of these division rivals.
Can we trust this Cardinals team? Who's going to show up on Monday night?
That's a huge question. And that's the thing. It is hard to trust and figure out what they're going to get. The one aspect is a lot of the guys who have been banged up and injured, they've been practicing this week. It's obviously do or die when you're in the playoffs, and guys that maybe wouldn't play if it was regular season because you want to save them. There's no saving players now for the future. And so they'll get a lot of the banged up guys back. The question will be, how effective will they be? And if they can be effective running the ball with Edmonds and Connor, like I said, getting Rondale Moore back, who's missed several games, and all the different things that he brings to the passing offense, and some of the guys on defense also, and J.J. Watt could be a huge lift. And no one knows how many snaps he'll play, but most coaches, most everyone will always tell you that most games in the NFL come down to four or five plays. And if J.J. Watt can make one of those game-changing plays, one or two, that's all you really need, plus his presence, that could give this team a lift. So I think that's what, how about this one? That's what makes this game a real wild card, a complete wild card weekend.
Howard Balzer, our very special guest, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show, publisher of the Arizona Cardinals, the old Cardinals site, Sports Illustrated. He is a Hall of Fame voter and co-host of his weekly Hall of Fame radio show, and you can dial that in on Sirius XM NFL Radio. He's just highlighting and talking about, you know, J.J. Watt is back for the Cardinals. Key players, key guys are back. Can they be effective? Is that the biggest question right now leading up to the matchup on Monday night?
Yeah, I really think it is. And no one ever, you know, everyone always talks about next man up, but when you lose starters, obviously, you lose a bunch of starters, there's a reason those guys are starters and other guys are backups. And the one thing, though, the one guy they won't get back, and this is what they have to figure out how to overcome, is DeAndre Hopkins. And this has been a totally different offense without him. Defenses play them differently. And so other players on that offense have to step up, and the Cardinals have had issues. You know, first half of the season, they were one of the better red zone teams in the league in terms of scoring touchdowns. Not so much recently. Even in the game, the loss to Seattle last Sunday, they had two possessions reach the Seattle 8-yard line for first down, and they had to settle for field goals. So that's one thing normally you can't do in the playoffs, especially when you're playing a good team like the Rams. You get to the red zone, you have to score touchdowns. And so without Hopkins is different, without the running backs is different, and so they're going to have to figure out how to get it done against not as good a defense statistically this year as it has been, and it certainly was last year, but the second game that they lost to the Rams on Monday Night Football about a month ago, Aaron Donald just took it over. And so when he takes over a game, it's very tough to defeat this team. So the Cardinals have to figure out a way to at least keep him. As Chase Edmonds, the running back, said earlier in the week, he said you can't let the game's best game wrecker wreck the game.
Yes.
And that's going to be the challenge for the Cardinals offense.
We have a total of six games that will be played on this super wild card weekend. We got two today. On Sunday, three, and Monday, one, and that certainly is the one that we're going to be focusing on right now, the Cardinals and the Rams, an 8:15 kickoff. I'm just curious, though, when we look over the league right now, why do you think there's not just been one or two super dominant teams this season? I mean, there's a lot of unpredictability going into this year's playoffs.
There really has been, and I think there's certainly not one thing you can put your finger on. Mm-hmm. I do think that obviously, we know how balanced this league is, and a lot of teams, there's not that much difference in the ability. And there's often not that many times that just one team is just going to dominate and separate themselves clearly from the pack. It's just the nature of the National Football League. And I think a big part of it, too, is that teams generally have gotten a lot better at playing on the road. And teams did very well on the road this year. And then we saw, you know, not very good teams upset teams that should win. Like, you know, last week, all of a sudden, Indianapolis is on the outside looking in because they lost in Jacksonville to a team that obviously had not won very many games during the year. And so I think it's just, and one thing, like I said, whether it's players that you're missing, whether it's injuries, whether it's COVID, and COVID certainly had a big impact down the last month of the season, when key players aren't there, then teams have to figure out a way to overcome it, but it can level the playing field a lot of times and give those underdogs hope that, you know, to play well. And so I think, like I said, I think that's the nature of the sport. It's been that way for a long time, and this year was another example of it. And what I think it does, though, it will make for a very, very intriguing, very fascinating playoffs, especially with these six games this weekend. We often see the road teams winning in this first round, and I'm going to be very, very curious how many road teams will come out victorious of these six games.
Howard, who is the best team right now in the NFL, or perhaps I should say, who's playing at their best?
That's a better way of you know, putting it, who's playing their best. And,
yeah,
you know, before last week, everyone would have said Kansas City. You know, they had righted the ship after a tough start, were on a roll, and all of a sudden they lost to a good team. Not to say that Cincinnati is a bad team, but they lost to the Bengals. and that cost them the number one seed in the playoffs. And look at both number one seeds. You know, Tennessee was left for dead a few weeks ago when they went through a tough stretch and lost to Houston in there. And then they came from behind to beat San Francisco in a Thursday night game. And all of a sudden, they're the number one seed. And I think people look at that and say, really? Is that the best team in the AFC? It's pretty well balanced there. NFC, is, of course, Green Bay has the number one seed. Mm-hmm. But you look at a team like Tampa Bay with Tom Brady. You look at, you know, if the Rams can get by the Cardinals, then they certainly have a lot of talent on both sides of the ball. The Cowboys are pretty good. So I don't know. I mean, I think right now Green Bay is maybe playing the best of anybody. But once you start 0-0 again, I don't even know. You always hear everyone says you want to be playing well going into the playoffs, but sometimes that doesn't matter. It's who plays best on that day when you have that game against usually a team that's pretty close to you in ability. Who makes the key plays at the right time? Who makes the bad mistake at the wrong time? That's what usually decides playoff games in the NFL.
So, Howard, where have all the really good NFL teams, where have they gone?
Well, you know, it's funny because back in the day, and when you go way back, when you had the Steelers, and then you had a stretch there with Dallas and San Francisco, that you could write that down before the season that those two teams were going to meet in the NFC Championship game. And most of the time they did. And a lot of people are saying, oh, this is not good for the sport. You want more. You don't want it to be the same team every year. Now, when it's not, everybody says, well, man, this layout's just all about parity. It's not very good and all that. Well, I think it just shows how competitive this league is. And the thing that's best for a sport is when you have competitive games. And we've certainly seen an awful lot of them. You see a lot of games decided by one score or less. And as I mentioned earlier, teams knowing how to get the job done on the road. And that, like I said, that definitely levels the playing field and gives total truth to the universal cliche of what can happen on any given Sunday. And in the playoffs, it can be any given Saturday, any given Monday, whatever day of the week it is. Pretty much anything can happen.
He is the publisher of the Arizona Cardinals, all Cardinal sites, Sports Illustrated Hall of Fame voter, co-host of his weekly Hall of Fame radio show, Sirius XM NFL Radio. And Howard, direct our listeners, what are they going to find on that site?
Oh, just a lot of stories about what the Cardinals have done for the season, how they're approaching this game, the return of J.J. Watt. Cliff Kingsbury said he expects Kyler Murray to play one of his best games on Monday night, which is pretty high expectations when they don't have, you know, when they don't have some of their weapons. But if there's a story, we have it at allcardinals.com, and it's a great place to go to get your Cardinals information.
Speaking of head coaches, Cliff Kingsbury, what were your expectations when he arrived in Arizona?
I didn't know. I mean, there were a lot of people who thought it was one of the worst hires in the history of the NFL. You know, a guy who hadn't coached at all on an NFL level, whether as a head coach or an assistant, and had not had a lot of success, certainly in college as a head coach at Texas Tech, although they were great offensively. But as a team, they didn't win a lot of games. And, of course, that's a tough conference to compete in. So I always say give a guy a chance. You can't make an evaluation immediately. And I think he's grown as a head coach. He's certainly been instrumental in the development of Kyler Murray. I do think that one of the most important things for a head coach is to have a pulse of his team and a culture and being a leader. And I think Kingsbury has grown in that role and does a pretty good job of it. And the reality is, even with the tough finishes the last two seasons, this team is, with him has gone from 3 wins the year before he got there to 5, to 8, and now 11, and in the postseason. So I don't know. You know, you can always find nits to pick with play calling here, play calling there, game plans and all those things. But overall, this team has gotten better. Certainly better players are a part of it, but they've gotten better with him as a head coach. And I think that he deserves, obviously a pretty good level of credit for that.
Longtime sports writer, nationally syndicated sports talk radio host, 45 years covering the NFL. He's a veteran and 41 Super Bowls. Give him a follow on Twitter, HBalzer721, and also BalzerFootball.com, publisher of the All Cardinals site at Sports Illustrated, SI.com/NFL/Cardinals. Howard Balzer, thank you so much. We really appreciate you spending some time with us on this Saturday morning.
My pleasure, Alyssa. Take care. Have a good day.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back to Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell. I love our listeners, and I love our audience. Thank you so much for allowing us to be a part of your weekend. Mark it down. You can join us every Saturday morning, 10 to 12 Eastern time, and we are always ready to tee it up and to talk some PGA news and notes. The PGA Tour, you bet, they are in Honolulu to conclude a two-week stay in Hawaii with the Sony Open that is underway, and always thrilled to have back with us. He is a former PGA pro. He made it to the top, and that is the great Larry Miller. Hello, Larry.
Hey, good morning, everybody. And boy, 2 weeks in Hawaii, I think we could all use that, couldn't we?
Hey, great. If it's Hawaii, or we could always use 2 weeks off, which is really nice. But we're super excited about 2022 and a brand new year. And we're also excited about Cameron Smith's, his big win in Maui. And he certainly set the tone this year in that record-setting fashion to hold off world number one, John Rahm, in that final round of the Tournament of Champions, 34 under. So give us your insight, your analysis from that impressive performance, and how did he make it happen?
Well, a few things about that week. First of all, it was a perfect storm. It was a perfect recipe for going really low because, number one, it's one of the shortest golf courses they're going to play all year. Number two, the fairways on that golf course are wide. Okay, it's hard to miss the fairways. There are a couple of holes where you have to fit it in there, but for the most part, very wide fairways, very short by tour standards. Now, add to that mix the fact that they could lift clean in place the ball. That's worth 2 to 3, maybe 4 shots a round for some people. You've got a perfect lie every single time on every shot you hit, which is very critical, especially when you get the short irons and wedges, because if you get a perfect lie with a wedge, you can go at any pin on the green. So now let's add to that recipe, let's add the distance these guys hit the ball these days. Okay, so I'm going to tell you, effectively, that golf course was probably, par for that course for the PGA Tour players was probably 5 under, at least. At least 5 under. The par fives, they were all hitting irons, sometimes short irons and middle irons to the green for their approach. But everybody in the field could reach every par five. And then you've got par fours where you're hitting wedges from a perfect lie that you can fix with your hand. Okay. So, as I said, given all those factors, 34 under is really not shocking to me. They're playing a golf course that's about par 67, maybe 68 for them. So, you add to that mix a couple of guys at the top who play outstanding that week and make a lot of putts, and you're going to have somebody shoot that low. So anyway, but it's remarkable. The guys are not afraid to go low these days, and there's a reason for that, too, that we can talk about also. But, it was pretty amazing, the scoring.
Well, we're talking about Cameron Smith's big win in Maui at the final round of the Tournament of Champions, 34 under, and it was against some of the best in the game. That field was loaded. But when we reflect back on his performance, he truly played with tremendous consistency throughout the round. What can we learn from that, Larry?
Well, he played with consistency, and he played with aggression. And that's the thing about going low in golf is that a lot of people get 1 or 2 under or 3 under, and boy, they say in their mind, they say, I've got a good round going, and the foot kind of comes off the gas a little bit, and you start coasting a little, and you're sort of protecting your score. But in order to go really low at golf, you got to keep that pedal down. If you get 2, 3 under, you want to get 4 under really bad. If you get 4 under, you're just dying to get 5 under, and you stay aggressive. And that's how you are able to shoot low scores in this game, is to keep the pedal down, stay aggressive when you have a good round going, instead of sort of resting on your laurels, and getting complacent with the nice round that you've got going. It's a mental state, and more than anything else. But when you decide to do that, it just kicks up the adrenaline a little bit, and you find yourself you know, the hole looks like a bucket up there, and you know, the fairway looks wide, and you just feel confident with every swing, and you don't doubt yourself. And so it all sort of compounds on itself and builds on itself when you decide. But it all starts with a mental attitude that you decide that you're going to get aggressive and keep the pedal down. So, and that's what he did. And Cameron Smith has an overall game. You know, he's a really great driver of the ball.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He's good with everything. He doesn't have a weak spot, but his real strength is his short game. And, I mean, as good as his long game is, his short game's even better. And so because of the short course they were playing for them, then his short game also enabled him to really post that low number. And then John Rahm was right with him, and you expect that from world number one because he also has a complete game. But the reason he didn't win and shoot 35 or 6 under is because he didn't make those putts like he made in the Open. And, mm-hmm. you know, when he won on the last hole when he made that long putt, and he has had a history of doing that the last couple of years. A lot of his wins have been on the last couple of holes making long putts. And he just didn't do that this time. And so he ended up, you know, a shot behind Cameron Smith. And so it's just a matter of when you get to that point in a tournament, it depends on who makes the putts at the end. And that's usually who comes out on top.
It is wild card weekend, but you know what? We are talking some PGA news and notes with always our favorite. That is Larry Miller, former PGA pro and also author. We would love to connect with all of you tuning in on this Saturday morning at eRadio Sports Info. EddieRadioSports.com, PodcastArena.com. Take us anywhere, anytime. Okay, so Larry, when we talk about 34 under, there was a lot of chatter about that these scores were too low. And so does golf need to change at the highest level? Because there was a lot of complaints about this was way too easy. And it kind of was like watching an NBA All-Star game. Not very challenging for professionals at the highest level.
That's a great analogy. It really is the NBA All-Star game where, you know, what is it, 162 to 158 or something at the end, and, you know, 34 under. But, you know, take notice, though, when they get to the U.S. Open, what wins the U.S. Open? A lot of times even par, one under, two under, maybe three or four at best. It shows you the difference in the course and the course setup. I'd like to see every tournament on the PGA Tour, like a U.S. Open. I mean, these are the best players in the world. Why not challenge them? Don't give them a slam dunk, you know, with a fish in a barrel. Just, you know, challenge them every week. And I think the golfing public would enjoy that a lot more, seeing these guys challenged and how they can cope with it with their excellent games. That would be very interesting because I find the U.S. Open the most interesting tournament of the year because of the fact that even par is a great score. So I'm in favor of that. I think, you know, but, you know, let's face it, the television networks, they want the viewers to see birdies.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's what gets them juiced and, you know, and get those commercials in, you know, keep them watching, and they'll keep watching if somebody's, you know, 7, 8, 9 under par. And then, you know, oh, gee, are they going to shoot 59? You know, I got to keep watching. And so that's what's behind all of that. But and that's why the USGA, I applaud them for maintaining the integrity of the U.S. Open by making the course very challenging.
You know, just a moment ago, you were giving us some keys to how to go low in golf. You're not thinking about your score. You get a birdie, you're on to the next one. Keep that pedal down. Don't try to project a possible score. But, you know, say you have an opening round where you do post a low score. How do you follow it up with another low round? That was one of my biggest takeaways, whether it was Cam Smith or John Rahm. I mean, these guys just, you know, floored it.
Yeah, just came out firing. Well, they know, you know, they know that despite their great first round, they know that the field is going to go low and that there's going to be some guys in the field that are going to go real low. And so in a tournament like that, it basically becomes a putting contest, really, because as I said, the par fives are all reachable. You got short irons and wedges to par fours for the most part. And so it comes down to a putting contest. Who's going to make the most putts? So that means that you not only have to be aggressive with your shots to the green, but you also have to be aggressive with your putting. And you have to try to make more putts. You know, if you got a 30-footer, a lot of times on the PGA Tour, on these undulating fast greens, a two-putt from there is not bad. You know, lag it up to tap-in distance. But in a tournament like that, you got to be thinking, trying to make this putt. You know, I need to hold this because I need as many birdies as I can get. So once again, it's an approach to the game. It's an attitude that you have to have in that situation. Fortunately, it doesn't happen that many times on the tour. I mean, this year, I dare say I would be willing to bet right now that there's not going to be another tournament where 34 under wins. No one's going to reach that number because that's the easiest track that they're going to play this year.
Cameron Smith, 28 years old, just an incredible week in Maui. But the Sony Open is underway right now. Of course, last week, shoots a 65, 64, 64, 65. But how do you score when you're playing in a golf tournament and there's been stoppage in play? Obviously, we've witnessed a lot of this, you know, in junior golf where you're being, you know, held up maybe 15, 20 minutes. I saw this recently in Orlando at Stevens Tournament, and it was like a holdup of almost 25 minutes. How do you still stay in that certain mindset?
Well, you have to stay physically active for one thing. You got to just step aside and maybe, you know, take your driver and swing it a few times slowly. You know, just you got to keep the golf muscles engaged. If you don't, what happens in golf? The golf swing is a very intricate thing. You know, it involves, as you know, it involves a lot of parts of the body moving at once.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole time you're doing that, you can't look at what you're doing. You're looking at the ball. It's a very complicated, intricate thing. And if you sit still for too long, your body, your golfing muscles will tend to kind of seize up a little bit or freeze up, and then when you start again, you got to get loose again, and you might waste a couple of holes in the process. So you got to do something. Two of my favorite things, I like to take a sand wedge because it's a heavy club and swing it slowly back and forth a few times while you're waiting, then take your driver, do the same thing. Maybe take your putter out and just practice your stroke for a second, you know, a few seconds or something. But you got to stay active. You got to keep the golf muscles engaged while you're waiting in order to be able to start, you know, start again right where you left off.
Our PGA News and Notes continues with Larry Miller after this quick timeout.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show right now. Let's go back inside the ropes with former PGA pro, the great Larry Miller. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. You are listening to former PGA pro Larry Miller. We're continuing our conversation from last week. Let's talk about now, who will take a step forward in 2022?
I'm trying to find my crystal ball here right now. Can't locate it, but because there's so many. You know, we talked about it last week. I mean, these guys, you know, these guys coming off the Korn Ferry Tour, just, I mean, there's just an endless supply of these people that come out and are ready to win. But I think, you know, we talked about Sam Burns. In my opinion, I think he is a potential next superstar in the game. No question in my mind about it.
Mm-hmm.
If he stays healthy. This guy, talk about going low. He shot 60 at Squire Creek, his home course, which is one of the hardest courses in that part of the United States, maybe in the whole country. Very difficult golf course. To shoot 12 under on that course is just about mind-boggling. So if he's got those kind of skills, if he has, you know, if he has those kind, then the sky's the limit for him. It's just a matter of staying healthy and just keep going. But you know, Victor Hovland has been talked about a lot with a complete game, and he's already won multiple times. You got Morikawa, but some of the younger guys like Taylor Gooch, maybe, you know, has really performed really well and had some great finishes. And I mean, the list, it just goes on, and it's hard to really, it's really hard to single out who could step to the front. But I'm thinking it's going to be one of those guys like Hovland or Sam Burns. Morikawa's already at the front, but I think he's going to get even further in the front with his game. So it'll be an interesting year. I think two big interesting things this year are going to be how much involvement is Phil Mickelson going to have in terms of playing this year? And how, is his game still going to hold up like it did last year? Is he still that good? Is McIlroy going to come back? Is Spieth going to have a great year? What's going to happen with Tiger Woods? You know, with there's been reports now that he may not tee it up again until that father-son next year. That there's apparently his body.
Okay, wow. I had not heard that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. They came out yesterday that that might, a close friend of his, John Cook, you know, PGA Tour player and now Champions Tour.
Yes, been on the show.
He's very close to Woods, and he said he doesn't think he's going to tee it up till the father son next year because his body is just not getting ready to be able to do what he has to do to compete. And that'd be a shame because I know everybody's looking forward to maybe seeing him at the Masters or at the Old Course, St. Andrews, but. We'll see. We'll see what happens. You know he's trying for sure, and he's got the willpower. It's just a matter of the physical body being able to handle it.
You know, I think one thing we have certainly learned, Larry, every week when we dial in and watch the PGA Tour is just the amount of depth with these guys. I mean, these players are so crazy good, and there's so many of them. They're coming at you in waves. You can't overlook anybody.
Oh, yeah. Like I said last week, I think if the Korn Ferry Tour teed it up.
Yes, you're spot on. Mm-hmm, I agree.
With the PGA Tour. I think that you'd see half the winners come from that tour. That's how good they are, these young players.
Mm-hmm. The Sony Open, it is underway. Enjoy the coverage. Always enjoy visiting and going inside the ropes with Larry Miller, former PGA pro. Of course, go anywhere online and pick up a copy of his latest release, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental, What He Never Told the World. And also go to his website, LarryMillerGolf.com. Larry, stay safe. Have a great weekend, and we look forward to visiting again next week. That, of course, was Larry Miller, who joins us each and every week at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big East Sports Show. A big thank you to legendary Kansas State football coach Bill Snyder, who joined us in Hour 1. And a big thank you to all of our amazing guests and our lineup, and my producer joining me this week, John Belmar. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big East Sports Show. Enjoy Super Wild Card Weekend.